The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast on Wednesday, the 10th of April, 2019. On the podcast today, I have Dr. Dan Gooding, Chief Executive Officer of Nuformix. NFX is the ticker there, and Dan discusses the strategic cannabinoid agreement they've recently signed. Also on the podcast, Nuno Sacramento, Chief Operating Officer of SafeStay, SSTY, and Nuno talks about some of the highlights from their final results today. Also on the podcast, John Mayer, mining analyst and partner at SP Angel, talks about the following companies: Anglo Asian Mining, Bushveld Minerals, Metal Tiger, Soul Gold, Savannah Resources, and Bluebird Merchant Ventures. Plus, as always, I have two lists for you. The top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours, and the top five most liked RNSs too. By the way, you can see top 10 versions of both these lists on the homepage here at voxmarkets.co.uk, where you'll see lots of other articles and content about companies and the macro issues here. You've got Malky's blog, an article on Predator Oil and Gas, an article on sea machines, and also a video worth looking at there. Check it out, voxmarkets.co.uk.
To receive free company updates straight to the front screen of your smartphone whenever a company you follow releases significant news, download the free Vox Markets app from voxmarkets.co.uk/app.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Dr. Dan Gooding, CEO of Nuformix. NFX is the ticker there. Dan, thanks for joining me.
Always a pleasure, Justin.
And especially considering, you know, you're busy there. I mean, you're in China at the moment, aren't you?
That's correct, yeah. In Shanghai.
Yeah, excellent stuff. Well, listen, we've a cracking RNS came out yesterday. The share price took off. The volume was absolutely stratospheric. And it was about a strategic cannabinoid agreement. And I suppose many shareholders would have been surprised by this. And we'll get into the detail of this in a bit. But as always, Dan, if someone's listening, so I've seen now you are one of the most followed companies now on Vox, so there are new people coming to the story all the time. So for those people or people not familiar with the story, can you just explain or summarise what Nuformix is all about, please, Dan?
Yeah, of course. So Nuformix is a pharmaceutical company. It's different in that it works on known drugs only. So we develop new treatments from known drugs. This gives a very different risk profile than you'd normally associate with your typical kind of biotech or pharma play. As a pharmaceutical development company, our business model is about how we prove that our new idea for how we use an old drug is going to be effective in treating a new disease before then looking to license and partner that product with a pharmaceutical company who will take it to market. So mm-hmm. Nuformix is about known drugs. Its business model is out licensing.
Yeah, absolutely. Licensing. Yeah, well, spot on. And that's what we've always chatted about when you've been in a podcast before, and you've got a pipeline there. And we'll touch on where that's going at the moment. But this bit of news is new. It's in a different kind of sector here. So can you outline, first of all, the agreement for the cannabinoid therapeutics development you've signed, Dan?
Yeah, sure. So we've signed an agreement regarding the development, exclusive development of the cannabinoid molecules, which, if anybody doesn't know what those are, they are the individual components, molecular components within cannabis itself. Each individual component carries a different kind of pharmacology, really. So we are focused on working on those individual cannabinoids. And under the agreement, for those that we're able to successfully apply our technology to and develop going forwards, there's a variety of different payment forms. We start with some upfront payments, and then there are some early stage milestones as we conduct our research, followed by sort of later stage payments if we're successful in being able to get some of these cannabinoids through into different clinical trials. So that's one component. You know, which kind of follows the kind of classic pharmaceutical development pathway where you have development milestones. We've also got a very strong royalty component, as you might have noticed. And this is really acknowledging that, you know, in certain markets, particularly the consumer products market, where we aren't currently active, there are opportunities for cannabinoid-based products like CBD and these kinds of things that people might have heard of before, you know, to go much more rapidly to market, you know, as a kind of a nutraceutical kind of product. So that recognizes the fact that, you know, we could be, in a relatively short period of time, having products using our technology in the market.
Yeah, yeah. So, and you reckon this is going to be up to around about £51 million up front for R&D and milestone payments. But on top of that, you've got royalties as well, up to 20%. Is that right?
That's right. So the milestone payments themselves, and those milestones will carry through right through to a phase three study. If you know we eventually get that far, if we're able to get that far with our partner, that's right. And so they're capped at 51 million with a 20% royalty on top of that as well.
But that is amazing, really, when you think of it. I mean, you are, and that's why the share price has gone berserk, because, of course, your market capitalization, your valuation right now is around about 16 million. So that's quite a deal, isn't it?
It is quite a deal, yeah. But, you know, I know I'm going to be biased when I say this, but I think, you know, Nuformix has been undervalued for a very long time. Mm-hmm. And this is just a reflection, I think, of people understanding the value of our technology and what we can bring when it comes to redeveloping known molecules. And in many ways, the cannabinoids are simply a known class of molecule.
Yeah. Well, tell us why you've got into this, because this is quite left field compared to what you have been doing. So why the cannabinoid sector?
Well, when you look at what's happening within certainly the field that we're most familiar with, pharmaceuticals, it's not so left field, particularly if you look at, say, what GW Pharma have been doing, as they've been, you know, getting closer and closer to success with their product portfolio. So they've recently had a product called Epidiolex recently approved on the market, which is effectively just CBD, cannabidiol, as a treatment for very severe forms of epilepsy. Now, they're forecast to do, you know, run about £1.5 billion in kind of peak annual sales with that product. So, you know, that's one example of a company that are looking at the sort of pharmaceutical opportunities for cannabinoids, you know, this kind of class of molecules. So, you know, it's not completely left field at all when you look at, you know, some of the things that people are doing at the moment in our industry with the cannabinoids. So when we've looked at them, they do two things that I think are really exciting. First of all, you know, in terms of what we look at when we're thinking of what to work on and why. So first of all, they've got really interesting what we call pharmacology, things that they do in the body to modify disease. They've got, you know, there's you know, hundreds of these molecules, all naturally occurring. They've got, you know, fascinating pharmacology and therefore potential to treat unmet needs. So that's the first reason we've looked at them. The second reason is because when you look at each of these materials, first of all, as natural products, they're not patentable themselves because they haven't been invented. They're naturally occurring, and you can't patent a substance like that. Secondly, also, their physical properties, the properties that determine how good a substance can be as a drug, are really bad. You know, they're kind of oily, kind of gummy substances. And so, therefore, as a kind of class of compounds, if you like, they're the kind of compounds that really make sense for our technology. We can find new ways to put patents in place, and we can really improve their properties to make them much better as medicines. So they're the two reasons that we've looked at them. Really good fit with our technology and what we know how to do. Secondly, really exciting pharmacology and potential as uses new medicines.
Yeah, and you mentioned it. I mean, the sector, the cannabinoid sector, is massive and growing, isn't it?
Yes, very much so. And that's, I think, largely because, you know, it does fall across two product spaces. It falls across consumer products, and it falls across sort of pharmaceuticals as well, as we're increasingly seeing. But obviously, you know, the consumer product side of things has taken off a lot faster than, you know, the sort of pharmaceutical applications. But I'm sure, you know, 5-10 years time will be a very different story.
Yeah, absolutely. So take us through, I don't know if I'm pronouncing this correctly, but the guys, you know, the company you hooked up with, Ebers Technology, why them, and what's it about them is attracted you to them?
Yeah, I think there's three things that really attract us to them. First of all, I think that Canada is the right thing, the right place to be doing this kind of business at the moment. I think that the UK is really lagged behind in terms of it's a regulatory attitude towards the cannabinoids. It's certainly holding back, you know, what we can do commercially and what we can do in a research kind of basis in this country. So, you know, location wise, absolutely perfect. They're also very well backed financially, but importantly, they're connected to one of the largest vertically integrated medical cannabis players, with strong connections to those kind of companies. You know, there's certainly opportunities for us to be able to find distribution partners really quickly, for particularly for any sort of consumer products that would be very quickly resulting from the work that we were doing.
Yeah, and so is it with this kind of product of cannabinoids, is it faster to market or what?
Well, if you're looking at the kind of consumer product space, mm-hmm. because of aspects of our technology, we don't need to do any further on the consumer product side. We don't need to do any further kind of testing or work, effectively to be able to allow our kind of cannabinoid 2.0 kind of products, if you like, to go to market. We don't modify any of the cannabinoids, so in any kind of way that makes them new chemical entities or anything like that. So they're able to proceed straight to market using our technology without the kind of clinical studies that you might want to see before those kind of pharmaceutical products can hit the market. So it's a very different play. These you know, co-crystal-based cannabinoids potentially could, you know, be very, very quick to market, which is why we've got that strong royalty component in the deal.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, before we get to just touching on your lead product there, so is this a one-off, or are you open to other opportunities in this kind of sector?
Well, I think, you know, as you know, when I've come on the podcast before, mm-hmm. we've talked about how, you know, we're always working on new ideas and new applications of our technology up in our lab in Cambridge, and this is just one of them. I'm sure, you know, we're going to see others as we look to apply our technology to different areas and really build out our portfolio. But also, you know, as we kind of diversify our opportunities to create value, both with our in-house programs and in partnerships such as this.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, well, let's just remind us of what's happening with your lead product now, NXP001. What's happening there at the moment, Dan?
Yeah, we've got into some very interesting times with that product. We're just wrapping up our clinical study. In fact, last dosing of patients takes place actually on Friday this week. We'll hopefully have our data back from that in around a month or so's time, so we can inform the market about how that trial has read out. We've got some very nice commercial milestones associated with being successful in that trial as well. So all of those kinds of things are going to play out over the next kind of 4 to 6 weeks.
Yeah, and what's the next sort of commercial milestone or payment you'll get for that then?
So in terms of the existing agreements that we have, we'll see another 2.5 million coming in from a first milestone of 500,000 and a second milestone of 2 million in relation to aspects around the work that's ongoing there.
Marvellous stuff. Okay, Dan, good to chat to you. Before we go, as always, if someone's listening right now, likes the sound of what you're doing but are not following the story, give them those three quick reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page and add you to their watch list, please.
Yeah, of course. I think number one would be confidence. I hope that investors can have confidence in us now in terms of what we're doing. We're delivering on everything that we said we were going to do in terms of our in-house programs, but also now with today's deal, demonstrating that we're always looking to find interesting ways to apply our technology to create value. I think secondly, I think also today's deal demonstrates the kind of optionality that we have within our portfolio also to create value and therefore, you know, the reduced risk in us ultimately being successful as a business. I think lastly, I will also still maintain that despite yesterday's activities, that I still think that there's a disconnect between New Formix's value and its valuation. I still think it's a very good time for investors to get on board with New Formix.
Marvellous stuff. Good to chat, Dan, and hopefully we'll be catching up in the not-too-distant future. Thanks a lot.
That would be great. Thanks, Justin.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Nuno Sacramento, Chief Operating Officer of SafeStay, SSTY. Nuno, thanks for joining me.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, and you've just released your final results and looking very positive. We'll go through the detail of that in a bit. Before we do, Nuno, if someone's listening right now and don't know what SafeStay is, can you give us a brief summary as to what the business is all about, please?
Well, SafeStay is the brainchild of Larry Lipman, and Larry will be known to your listeners as the guy that moved SafeStore to scale. The interesting story in there is that he took over SafeStore with two or three stores, as they call them, and he moved it in 2 years to 22 stores. In doing so, he moved the value of the business from a few million pounds to £100 million at the point of sale. We think the same fundamentals apply to the hostel industry, which is there is no particular brand standing out. There is no consolidation, and nobody is doing it really right because nobody is paying attention. So what we're doing is we're creating, trying to give scale to the brand in a sector that is fragmented. And we're hoping that it stands out as the fastest growing hostel chain in Europe right now. Yeah. We're creating this thing we call a radical new experience of staying in a modern hostel. So forget any compromises if you stayed in hostels before. Forget dodgy accommodation. Think more boutique hotel with a truly, truly vibrant, edgy guest experience.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And do you know what? I was just thinking, if anyone's listening to this and you know, you stay in hostels or maybe you're an investor and maybe your son or daughter's going traveling and you're thinking, where can they stay? And you're a bit worried. Check out SafeStay. You'd be very surprised, because I was when I went there. Like I said, I've got a traditional view of hostels, and I went to your website and I thought, wow, that is a change. And I think it is very interesting. You've got Larry there who's done it, this kind of model before, and he's seen a gap here and he's going for it, isn't he?
Yes, absolutely. We've developed a model that fits iconic buildings. We think we have to be in absolutely the right locations, because hostel travelers, adventurous travelers, they know what they want. They're making some compromise in terms of the accommodation, and they're quite happy to stay in a dorm, but they want a great experience. And it's this great experience that we think is becoming a differentiator between us and the rest of the market.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, do you know what? I've done some travelling when I was younger, in between sort of after my A-levels, and I stayed in some dodgy hostels, and I wish SafeStay was around then, because that wouldn't have happened, you know. But let's go into your full year results. They're looking very good. To begin with, let's talk us through. You've got a 39% increase in revenues.
Well, we're a rollout, so some of that comes from acquisitions, and we expect to maintain the pace of revenue growth for many years to come as the rollout continues. Now, the exciting news is that we've managed to continue to grow like-for-likes in occupancy, average bed rate, and ancillary revenue. And these three fundamentals tell us that we're being able to apply scale without losing any of the momentum. That for us is very, very important, because it's what gives the business sufficient engine power to carry on growing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, you mentioned the rollout there and you're growing. So what stage are you at in terms of rolling out the brand, and what are the next sort of milestones you're targeting?
Well, we get asked this question a lot, and I think it's really important to let your listeners know that we've managed to acquire three properties last year from self-raised funds. We bought a property in Barcelona, one in Brussels, and one in Vienna. So great locations, but we did that with our own funds. So that's important, and that should continue as the business grows. Mm-hmm. By the same token, at the end of 2019, we've raised £10 million around December when the market was a little bit deflated. So it was pretty impressive. And what we saw is all the existing shareholders wanting to hold their position, the institutional shareholders. So we're in a great position. We've got self-raised funds. We've got £10 million in the bank. And we've mapped out the 40 locations we want to be in. In some locations, we may want to have a couple of properties. In some others, we just want to have presence in the city. Yeah. Now, the perfect deal doesn't exist, not for the right money. So we're using Larry's property expertise, and we take an opportunistic view on the deals in front of us.
Yeah, exactly. Like you say, you've got the money there. You know, your funds are raised, and you're expanding, so you're looking at new places. But what, I mean, you see this at your track record, you like to be in good cities, good locations, but what are the cities? Can you give us some clues as to where you're looking?
Well, I can't disclose any share sensitive information. But I think with our track record, we've been doing this for a few years now, and we've got this fast pace of growth that investors should be confident that we're going to maintain. We want to be in Berlin, Amsterdam, Rome, Milan, any great sounding tourist powerhouse, we want to be there. But it's the right deal. We want to spend our money wisely. We've learned quite a lot about what works better, and we definitely want to be very sensible about how we run the business.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, people just have to go to your website, safestay.com, and see the locations you're in. They are very, you know, attractive locations, aren't they? You know, you got London, you got York, Edinburgh, you know, Spain and Barcelona and Madrid. There's lots of places. So, you know, where I suppose you have to locate as well in these exciting places, because that's where people want to go, isn't it, I suppose? So it's all exciting. So give us your positioning in the market. Give us a feel for the hostel market and your position within it, if you could.
Well, this is a great time to join the hostel market. We're front runners in trying to consolidate. Just to give you an idea, there are no really relevant chains in the hostel market as you find in the hotel market. There's the YAJ and Hosteling International. They're charities, different business model, and they've got some scale. But below that, there is very little. There is a large group based in mostly Germany called A&O. They've got 20-odd properties. And then there is the Generator, which is probably the highest brand recognition in terms of hostels, a great deal done a couple of years ago. They were sold for $470 million with 13 properties across key locations in Europe. We're as well positioned as all of them. We've got the same size network at this point, but we've got money in the bank, and we've got this PLC support behind us that allows us to raise funds and keep on growing and keep on putting more scale. So we're as small groups go, we're one of the largest now in the market, yeah. And it's still a lot to consolidate because there's no consolidation.
Yes, it's an exciting space, I suppose. And finally, as always, Nuno, when you come on on the podcast, on a daily episode, I do highlight the top five most followed companies. So if someone's listening right now, likes the sound of what you're doing, but don't have them on your watch list, give them three reasons why they should add you to their watch list, please.
Well, the first thing I would like your listeners to see in SafeStay is that we're creating a radical new experience of staying in a modern hostel. It's not the same old. It's an absolutely guest-centric product that will stand the test of time. We're building something for the future. We also have a track record of growth that should give investors the reassurance that we understand the property market, we understand how to operate, and we're managing our business in a very judicious approach to every penny spent. Mm-hmm. On the back of that, we've got self-generated funds that we can use to expand the business, and we've got $10 million in the bank ready to go and make a great acquisition. So 2019 should be absolutely fabulous for SafeStay.
Excellent stuff. Nuno, good to chat to you, and hopefully we'll be catch up again in the not too distant future. Thanks very much.
Thank you, Justin.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is John Mayer, mining analyst and partner at SP Angel. You all right, John?
Yes, very good, thank you.
Haven't spoken for a couple of weeks. You've been busy. I've been less busy, probably. But, you know, hooking up our very busy social calendars. I haven't got one, to be honest. It was provided a challenge. But you're back. That's the main thing. And you are my eyes and ears on the resource market, of course. And do you know what I was tweeting about today? When we had the IMF come out, they downgraded global growth three times now since October, right? But I've heard a couple of people saying, oh, their stats are very questionable, and they're usually behind the curve anyway. They're usually 6 months out or whatever. And I looked it up, and I found a little piece on Bloomberg saying, for 56% of the time, the IMF underestimate global growth, and 44% of the time, they overestimate. So they're never in the ballpark. They're always out. It's always quite hard, and forecasting anything is hard. It's telling the future. So you can never just run the figures by and do a computational sort of readout and say, oh, this is what it's going to be, because things don't work like that. So it's always good to look at them, and everyone does, but they're never, taken with a pinch of salt, isn't it, really,
Well, we're honoured to be your eyes and ears in the market, certainly for mining the stuff. And yes, I mean the IMF produce their figures. Of course, they're cautious and they like to double check what they're doing. And the rest of the world, which is a bit more adventurous and brave in its forecasting, the game is to try and forecast what the IMF are going to do next. And I'm not sure it's that difficult a game either. I mean, the markets have been 6 months ahead of the IMF, I reckon, on this one. And sometimes the IMF take a bit longer to get round to their growth revisions, and sometimes maybe they're a little bit quicker. But as you say, maybe sometimes they tend to overshoot and then undershoot a bit. So when they get cautious, they probably get a bit too cautious. And when they get optimistic, maybe they're too optimistic as well sometimes. So damned if they do, damned if they don't.
Yeah, but you know what I think? And this is a very base level thought, but I think it's applicable, is that humans, right, are one of the cleverest evolutionary animals ever. And that's because we can adapt. And when you have a downturn, humans within business adapt. And it's almost like Brexit. At the moment, I think we are a suppressed spring. You know, we've been held down. But humans find ways, and business people, entrepreneurs, find ways to make the business work. So at the moment, like you see, Britain's growth has went up to 0.3% the last 3 months. It's higher than forecast. People say stockpiling. But I genuinely believe, you know, when you're against it, the good business people, the good entrepreneurs, find a way, and so almost like in this downturn, when we're all very gloomy about prospects, we manage to do it. We almost do it better than we can than we think. You know, so when you forecast really gloomy news, it's not as gloomy as you think, because there's ways around it. We adapt. You know, that's what humans have always done. You know.
Well, things are never usually as bad as the doomsayers would have us believe. No doubt there is some form of project fear going on right now. And you're absolutely right. Business people are very good at innovating and finding new ways to sell things, new markets to sell things into. And I wouldn't be nearly as downbeat as some would be. Mm-hmm. But, you know, one has to be aware that there is change coming, and people have to adapt to that change.
Yeah, okay. Let's get into some individual bits of news. What have you got there, John? Anything happening?
Anglo-Asian put out a nice report today. Their gold equivalent production was up 11% year on year. So there's a bit more copper coming out of the mine. That's just what nature has given us in terms of geology. And so they're producing more copper, and that's coming out through the flotation plant, which again is a new addition to the tools that they have in their armory for processing this material. So things are going really rather well.
Mm-hmm. Cool. And the stock price there is looking quite resilient, isn't it? It's done quite well over the last year. It's gone up from like 40 pence to almost 90 pence. It's consolidating a bit now. But gold, people, every now and again, people are reminded that gold is a safe haven, aren't they? You know, so it's always a good place to, you know, there's always a space in your portfolio for a bit of gold, I think, you know?
Well, the gold price is ticking up with the negative news on the global economy. So the gold price is looking a bit more interesting all of a sudden, and that's good for companies like Anglo-Asian. So we're fairly upbeat about that. Mm-hmm. Looking around the rest of the market, little bits of news coming out from various other companies. Bushveld had an update on their Lemur Holdings subsidiary, which they hold 100% of. And that project, that Lima has a power project in Madagascar, that's going quite well. They seem to be working through the process to get ready to build that project. They've got $1 million coming in from the Development Bank of South Africa towards completion of the project work there. So that's something where we've included no value in our modelling, and actually there could be quite a lot of value to come through, which would be nice.
Yeah. So they went, I mean, look at the share price. I know chartists do this. They look at the rise. So from March 2018 up to about November 2018, a cracking rise from like 8 pence up to sort of 48, almost 50 pence. So you've got to look now, they're consolidating. How long will that consolidation take? Some would say almost equal to that, you know, those movements. But it is consolidating around 30 pence, so it looks like a good level there. But just try to test that level twice now, and there's previous resistance there on the chart, so that 30 pence level should be quite good.
Well, the major driver for Bushveld is the vanadium price, and the vanadium price has come down off its high levels. I think what's going on there is that the Chinese have been trying to sell vanadium into the European market, and European consumers have been holding off. I think the Brexit situation is much more serious for European steel producers. They're worried that the withdrawal of the money that we put into the European Union will lead to the stalling and delay of quite a lot of capital projects across Europe. The pullback in the amount of money available will just mean delays in building bridges and roads and other infrastructure. So the buyers of vanadium are just holding back for a while, and that's causing prices to fall for now.
Yeah, marvellous stuff. What else is up there, John? Any other news?
Metal Tiger added to its Botswana land position. Minor news, Solgold had another drilling update. Yet another spectacular long drill hole. 1,918 metres of mineralisation, grading 0.53% copper. And that was outside the existing inferred resource area. But they don't tell us where the copper starts on that. So we're lacking some of the detail there. And then another hole into a previously unknown source intrusion. Good grades, 0.67% copper, and then including 100 metres of 1.34% copper, which is very nice. So interesting stuff coming out of Solgold here, and certainly that project's looking better all the time, which is good.
Yeah, well, copper is always good. I mean, there's a safe space to be, isn't it? Next 5, 10, 20 years, isn't it?
It absolutely is, and there's a huge copper conference going on in Chile at the moment called CESCO, and some interesting comments coming out of there. The head of Rio Tinto's copper division said that the world is going to have to produce more copper in the next 25 years, or as much copper in the next 25 years as it's produced in the last 500 years. So,
wow.
So there's an awful lot to be done. Anglo American were there saying that they reckon they were going to get 30% improvement in their operations just by applying technology to their copper mines in Chile. So that's nice to hear. I mean, I think they've got to improve those operations because those big mines are getting very, very deep now. And I think the risk of, shall we say, pit failure or other risks with those very deep, very big mines, it must surely increase. And so that means that the potential for problems in global production must again increase along with that.
Yeah. Well, so that stat again, they have to produce as much copper in the next 25 years as the previous 500, is that right?
Yes, exactly.
That is phenomenal, isn't it?
Yeah, which almost encompasses the whole history of copper mining when you think about it.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. But I mean, obviously, we've needed more, and technologies have improved, allowing us to get more, and obviously, globalization and commercialization has done that. But still, that's a heck of a stat. It sounds very impressive.
It surely is.
Marvellous. Anything else, John?
Well, Savannah Resources, let's not forget them. It's another one of our clients. They had a lithium resource increase in Portugal at that Mina do Barroso lithium project. So they've now got 23 million tonnes, grading just over 1% lithium. And that's nice. I mean, it's nice because it's in Europe. It's in a good area. I think it's very financeable. And it looks like the sort of project that should be quite easy to mine. So consistency and simplicity are important things in the mining game, and I think that one's matching up quite well. So well done, Savannah.
Marvellous. SAVP. Cool. Is that it, John?
Yep, that's right. SAV.
Okay. No, I mean, is that it news wise? Anything else?
There are lots of other little bits and pieces, but I think that catches most of it. Bluebird Merchant Ventures had a progress report at their Gubong project in South Korea. Really, the proof of that is when they start mining, and they've got two old gold mines, gold and silver mines there in South Korea, and let's see where it goes.
Marvelous stuff, cool stuff, John. Thanks for that, and we'll catch up next week, fella.
Look forward to it. Thank you.
Okay, it's time for the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. They are at five. Block Energy, BLOE, of course, doing very well. Xeros Technology, XSG. I like the company, but listen, this is the way I'm approaching this. I've said about this in my video that I did on the weekend. I own some stock, but I'm only dipping my toe in here because they've got final results coming out end of this month. Now, these final results are for 2018. Most of their revenue generation is happening in this year, so it won't be accounted for in that set of results. So, you know, if you've done your research, they've done some deals with some massive companies, you know, some of the biggest in China and all that stuff. It's all about sort of water reduction as well, their wash machines and plastic reduction. Filters in the wash machines that can be fitted to, you know, ordinary wash machines. But they're in development. They've had a lot of cash burn. They have got cash, 20 million they got. But, you know, go easy. Don't go too crazy at the moment because their final results are, of course, an historical document looking back at 2018, which there was a lot of cash burn there, a lot. Okay, at three, it's new Formix. I checked Dr. Dan Gooding, not Don. He is the Don, but very impressive there. Do you know what? I listened to a podcast recently about a VC guy in California. He's originally from India, but his company has backed quite a lot of successful startups. And he says, always back the person, always back the man, because the people behind companies are the people that, basically it's down to them, isn't it? It doesn't matter what the product is. If it's not good, they'll change or find something good that'll work. You know, successful people will always find a way of adapting. And that's evolution. I chat about that with John. And always back the person. Dan's like that. I mean, they've got already, you know, a pipeline of drugs are doing very well. But they've seen another opportunity in the cannabinoid space. And they've gone for that as well. And I quite like that in Dan. You know, he's grasped this excellent, you know, royalties and milestone payments. But they've looked at other opportunities as well as what they've got already. Massive market and gone for that as well. And I quite like that. Yeah, that sort of adaptability, you know, into a fast-growing market. And cannabinoids are faster to market because there's less legislation. At two, Indiviva. Indiviva, whatever it's called. INDV. I don't understand why people are jumping on these stocks at the moment. You're going to get burned. You're catching a falling knife. Don't do it. You know, it's a bad report there from INDV, and people are jumping on them, looking for a trade. Don't buy, you know, buy stock in a good company. Don't, you know, not a bad company. Number one most followed companies: Cadogan Petroleum (CAD). Okay, top five most liked RNSs are as follows: at five, Bidstack, appointment of non-executive director. They are forming a great team. I mentioned this on Twitter. They've just appointed a guy who's ex-Sega, ex-Nintendo. He's with Codemasters. So they've got people now from Apple, Spotify, the Trade Desk, King, which is Candy Crush. I mean, you know, for a small cap company, phenomenal people around them. At four, Powerhouse Energy, lease agreed for hydrogen development site. I did like the quote there from the guy at Peel. So this is one of many that will be happening. At three, Predator Oil & Gas, extension to licensing option at 1630 Ramhead. At two, United Oil & Gas, holdings in company. And number one most liked RNS came from Infrastrata, LMG gas storage project update. That's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. Muchos apreciados.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.